This is Wade Rathke. That means it's Wade's World. It's Friday morning. It's 9 a.m., 9:30. We're on KABF, 100,000 watts of people power, 88.3 FM on your dial, and we're on WAMF, 100 watts of people power at 90.3 out of New Orleans. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. Today we're going to start talking to Dharminder Kumar, Acorn India's representative in Delhi and longtime director of the FDI, India FDI Watch Campaign in Delhi. Welcome to Wade's World again, Dharminder. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Wade.
Look, we've talked a lot about hawkers, and we're organizing a lot of hawkers in India. There's a new law that we fought for. Why don't you explain what that means to us here?
Yeah, there was a decade-long struggle that hawkers were involved in, and they basically wanted to get formalized, and they wanted to have certain kind of regulations which could protect their livelihood so that they can earn the livelihood and run their family smoothly and have a decent life at the end of the day. So the demand was for a central act which could be applicable for the whole of India, and we finally got the victory last year, and now we have an act called Protection of Street Vendors' Livelihood and Regulation of Vending Act 2014.
And when we talk about hawkers, we're talking about street vendors. We're talking about people who sell vegetables, clothes, housewares, everything, fruit, everything you can imagine on the street in India. That's a very big group of workers, isn't it?
Yeah, it includes almost everything, electronics, toys, clothes, and kitchenwares, and all sorts of things
that tapes, you name it.
You can imagine in a big box retail.
That's right. So everything but refrigerators and wash machines.
Even that is available if that is used.
That's higher, if it's used, okay.
Yeah.
So the Street Vendors Act of 2014, what did it give us that is so important?
First of all, it gave us a recognition that we have the fundamental right to live with dignity. So it recognized our right to livelihood. Because earlier, the people were seen as some kind of nuisance, who were creating nuisance for the traffic, for the residents. But now there is a recognition that street vendors contribute immensely to the informal economy and to the larger benefit of society. And they serve particularly to the unserved consumers who are low-income families, working families. So they have been recognized as the backbone of the low-income communities. And now there is a greater understanding among the policymakers and among society about the role that they play. So we have an attitudinal change in favor of street vendors, but we still need to make this act implementable at the grassroots level.
State by state, now that's the fight. Because we've had one time after another where street vendors were hassled, they didn't have the right ID, or the police would try to shake them down and take bribes, or remember there was a mayor in Bombay Municipal Corporation a couple of years ago, she wanted to clear all the footpaths everywhere, and so they put police moving the vendors out of the way, didn't they? So where is the implementation process now in Delhi and other places?
The Act says that each and every city in India has to form a town vending committee, and this town vending committee will have representation of street vendors, and this representation cannot be less than 40% of the total membership. So that is a huge victory for street vendors' struggle. So once they have 40% representative in the town vending committee, and the town vending committee is supposed to be the final authority who will take final call on the vending, their locations, their timings, their regulations. So the town vending committees are getting formed in some cities depending on the power that they hold in the city politics. So we have town vending committees in metros like Delhi, in Mumbai, and some small towns like Pune. But for example, in Bangalore, we still do not have the town vending committee. So there are largely more cities without town vending committee and less cities in town vending committees.
So now part of that's just because it's a new act.
It's a new act, and right. the process takes some kind of right. pushing from the street vendors. So we are trying to push it from different quarters in different cities. So things are moving, but slowly.
We also have with us Suresh Kashiran, and we have one of our leaders here for the, what's the name of this, what do we call this market, Suresh?
This is the Hebbal Market.
Hebbal Market. And we're under a flyover, as they're called,
yeah.
expressway on the expressway, way to the airport.
Expressway to the airport. It's just right under the expressway to the airport.
So and I'd like to ask our leader here what it took for them to win the big victory here. Or would you tell us, or would he tell us and you translate?
He'll tell you and I'll translate it to you.
Okay,
ಇಲ್ಲಿ ನಿಮ್ಮ ಒಂದು ಗೆಲುವಿನ ಒಂದು ಇದನ್ನು ನೀವು ಹಂಚ್ಕೊಳ್ಳಿ. ನಿಮ್ಮ ಸಂಘಟನೆ ಮಾಡಿದಂಥ ಹೋರಾಟ ಅದರಲ್ಲಿ ನಿಮಗೆ ಸಿಕ್ಕಂಥ ಫಲ.
ನಮಗೆ ಈಗ ಸಂಘಟನೆ ಆಗೋಕ್ಕೆ ಮುಂಚೆ ತುಂಬ ಕಷ್ಟನೇ ಪಟ್ಟಿದ್ರು. ಅದು ಸಂಘಟನೆ ಆಗಿ ಈಗ ಒಂದು ವರ್ಷ ಆದ ನಂತರ ಒಂದು ವರ್ಷದಿಂದ ಈಚೆಗೆ ಯಾವುದೋ ಸಮಸ್ಯೆಗಳು ಇದನ್ನ ಅವರು ಆಡಿದ ಅವರು ವ್ಯಾಪಾರ ಮಾಡ್ತಿದ್ದಾರೆ.
ಓಕೆ,
ಹಂಗಾಗಿ ಈಗ ಸಂಘಟನೆಯಲ್ಲಿ ನಾವೆಲ್ಲರೂ ಒಂದು ಒಗ್ಗಟ್ಟಲ್ಲಿದ್ದು ನಾನು ಸಹ ಗೌರ್ಮೆಂಟ್ BBMPಯಲ್ಲಿ ಏನು ಸವಲತ್ತುಗಳು ಪಡ್ಕೊಬೇಕು ಅಂತಿದ್ದೀನ ಅದ್ರ ಬಗ್ಗೆ ನಾನು ಒಂದು ಕೆಲವೊಂದು ಸವಲತ್ತುಗಳನ್ನ ಮಾಡಿಕೊಟ್ಟು ಇವ್ರಿಗೆ ಒಂದು ವ್ಯವಸ್ಥೆ ಮಾಡಬೇಕು ಅಂತಿದ್ದೀನಿ. ಸೊ ಅದಾದ ನಂತರ
ಹಿ ಸೇಸ್ ದಟ್ ಎನ್ ಇಯರ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ they had a lots of problems confronting with the police people, the municipality people and the local goons also. But now after forming the union, getting together, united, fighting against the system, they are now free from the harassment of the officials, government officials, and to some extent they are all today united. And they all come forward for, not like previously when they were not get together, but now they are they would like to stand united for the fight.
And they forced the city and other authorities to build something for them, didn't they?
No, nimma ondu aa ondu idu agodikke nimma prayatnagalu enane antu ಅಲ್ಲಿಂದ ಅಲ್ಲಿ ಆಗಿರ್ತಕ್ಕಂಥ ಮಾರ್ಕೆಟ್ ಜಾಗಕ್ಕೆ
ಆ ಮಾರ್ಕೆಟ್ ಜಾಗಕ್ಕೆ ನನ್ನ ಪ್ರಯತ್ನ ಅಂತ ಇಲ್ಲ. ನನ್ನ ಯೂನಿಯನ್ ನ್ಯಾಷನಲ್ ವರ್ಕರ್ಸ್ ಫೆಡರೇಷನ್ ಸೌತ್ ಇಂಡಿಯಾ ವರ್ಕಿಂಗ್ ಪ್ರೆಸಿಡೆಂಟ್ ಆಗಿ ಮಾನ್ಯ ಸುರೇಶ್ ಅವರು ಇದ್ದರು. ಅವ್ರ ಮುಖಾಂತರವಾಗಿ ನಾವು BBMPಯಲ್ಲಿ ಹೋಗಿ ಒಂದು ಮನವಿ ಮಾಡಿದ್ವಿ. ಅದರಂತೆ ಈಗ ಹತ್ತು ಜನ ಜಡ್ಜು ಹೈಕೋರ್ಟ್ ಜಡ್ಜ್ಗಳು ಸೇರಿ ಅದನ್ನು ಆರ್ಡರ್ ಮಾಡಿದ್ದಾರೆ. ಈ ಫ್ಲೈಓವರ್ ಕೆಳಗಡೆ ತುಂಬ ಗಲೀಜಿದೆ, ಇದನ್ನು ಸ್ಟ್ರೀಟ್ ವೆಂಡರ್ಗೆ ಮಾಡಿಕೊಡಿ ಅಂತ ಹೇಳಿ ಆರ್ಡ್ರ್ ಮಾಡಿಸಿ ಅದನ್ನು ರೆಫರ್ ಟು ದಿ MLA ಏರಿಯಾ MLAಗೆ MPಗೆ ಕೊಟ್ಟಿದ್ರು. ಅದನ್ನು MLA ಅವರು ಮಾಡಿಸ್ಕೊಟ್ಟಿದ್ದಾರೆ.
ಆಫ್ಟರ್ ಪರ್ಸಿಸ್ಟೆಂಟ್ ಡಿಮ್ಯಾಂಡ್ಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಟು ದ ಮುನ್ಸಿಪಲ್ ಕೌನ್ಸಿಲ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ದ ರೆಸಿಡೆನ್ಷಿಯಲ್ ಪ್ಲೇಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ದ ಜಡ್ಜಸ್ ನಿಯರ್ ಬೈ ದ ಜಡ್ಜಸ್ ದೇರ್ ರೆಸೈಡಿಂಗ್ ಆಟ್ ದ ಜಡ್ಜಸ್ ಕ್ವಾರ್ಟರ್ಸ್ ದೇ ಇನ್ ರೋಡ್ ಟು ದ ಮುನ್ಸಿಪಾಲಿಟಿ ಟು ಕ್ಲಿಯರ್ ದ ಗಾರ್ಬೇಜ್ ಅಂಡರ್ ದ ಫ್ಲೈಓವರ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಬಿಲ್ಡ್ ಅ ಪ್ಲಾಟ್ಫಾರ್ಮ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಪ್ಲೇಸಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ದ ಸ್ಟ್ರೀಟ್ ವೆಂಡಿಂಗ್ ಪೀಪಲ್ ಸೊ ದೇ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಅ ಕ್ಲೀನ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಹೈಜಿನಿಕ್ ಪ್ಲೇಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ದೇರ್ ವೆಂಡಿಂಗ್ ಬಿಸ್ನೆಸ್.
If you walked up the road past the
railroad tracks, yes,
you can see the area is almost, the first part is almost finished. It has numbers for the vendors, and there's going to be an allotment process.
That is what I was explaining.
Right.
We went to the municipality council and to the judges in the residential area nearby, and with their help by the judges, nearly 10 judges writing a letter to the BBMP, which is the corporation. So that
they're going to build another one down here where we are now.
Yeah, this
right?
side, this side. This right. side, we are still lobbying for getting that done.
So that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Earlier, we were at another market near the railroad station, and we ran into an interesting problem.
Yeah.
Where they tried to get people from the footpath to the street. You want to explain what that problem was between the High Court and the Supreme Court? And I guess this new law as well, right?
Yeah. That was a different area, Yashwantapura. And there, this vending business was happening for more than 60 years. And it's Yashwantapura. And from the past five years, there has been a big three-star lodging facility. Three-star lodging facility which happened there. So the hotel people, they want that area to be cleared so that their customers are not put to inconvenience. So they went to the High Court and lodged a suit against the street vendors, which was fought for nearly 3 years. And after 3 years, the High Court ordered the municipal council and the officials to see that the business is carried out in a proper way and not disrupting the movement of customers into the hotel and out. So at this juncture, what happened is the BBMP, the municipal council and the police, they mistook this order to say that as there was another High Court order saying that the footpaths to be cleared, the pedestrian paths to be cleared. So getting confused with both the orders, they said that footpath, the vendor should not be on the footpath. And the police people, the traffic police, who well explains that it is a risky thing for the vendors to be on the roads. So they say, the police say they should not be on the road. The municipal council says not to be on the footpath. So they are jumping from
contradicting each other.
Yes. So now they are on the streets when the municipality officials are there, and they are on the footpath when the police people are there. So this is how it is working out there.
So every Sunday they go for the footpath.
On the footpath.
The rest of the week they're in cars on the street.
On the street.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the way a lot of these things are going to work out on the law, Dharmendra?
Once the law gets implemented, I think things will be streamlined and there will be demarcated spaces on the pavements. Because the Supreme Court had ordered historically that pedestrians have first right on the pavements. But the Supreme Court also recognized the right of the hawkers to livelihood. So there is no conflict of interest or conflict between pedestrians' right and between the hawkers' right to vending. So both rights can coexist together.
Yes.
And obviously pedestrians have to have a way to move along the street. So recognizing the pedestrians' right on the pavement, the street vendors can equally share that pedestrians by having one part of that pavement for their livelihood. So that the Supreme Court has also demarcated and asked the state governments
and
to build wider pavements at least of 10 feet and give 1/3 for the street vending and keep rest 2/3 for the pedestrians. So there is a way if the city is willing to find out.
And here's a classic example. We're not near any neighborhoods. This is a flyway on the way to the airport to town. So people are coming from the metro train station, they're going to the buses on the other side. This is just a...
There is no metro station.
And there is
the outer ring road.
The ring road.
Ring road, yeah.
And there is
but
no
there's a huge traffic coming through here.
No traffic.
Yeah. But on this lane, because this is going to the railway crossing, and there is no railway crossing on the ground. It's only highway. So there is no traffic movement. So I think pedestrians can easily be relocated and do that peacefully.
No, see, here we have another problem in this place, in this particular place in Hebbal. Though there is no vehicular movement, traffic movement on this particular stretch, but there is a project to be executed for the smaller vehicles as an underpass under the railway tracks. Okay.
For people.
Only for the people, yeah. For the people to cross the railway tracks, there is a project to construct the underpass. So once that underpass is going to happen, this people will be displaced and the place will be given to the underpass construction.
Gotcha.
So before that we are trying to have that vendors shifted right under the flyover with the proper facilities.
That's why Acorns Union is so important here.
Yes.
But even
it's a continual fight.
Even here I don't see a conflict, you know. Even if there is an underpass, you can always ask the spaces in the underpass. Because that will also make underpass safe. Because we had a lot of cases in Delhi and other cities.
Yeah,
underpasses have not been found safe for women particularly, because it is deserted.
Yeah.
So we are demanding in other cities that underpasses or under the flyover, street vendors should be allocated spaces.
Located under
the city safe.
Safe. But there is also a High Court ruling in Bangalore on a PIL by some
advocate
saying that the underpass are encroached by the street vendors, and that has to be cleared.
So this needs to be regulated.
What happened is before all the underpasses had this vendors inside the underpasses. Okay. So now what the police people have, after the High Court order comes, the police have taken steps to see that there is no vendor inside the underpass. You can be outside and you are not supposed to be on the entrance also, to the entrance also.
I think if that vendors do not block the pathway,
yeah,
you know, it will be very pedestrian friendly and hospital also enjoy the shaded.
Yes,
you know,
for that we have to.
So we need such policy changes which suits pedestrians as well as
We're still making great progress in terms of securing livelihood for.
The good thing is that the debate is going on around all those issues.
Yes.
And we need to intervene as an organization.
So this has been Wage World in Bengaluru, talking to Dharmendra Kumar and Suresh Kashidan and our local leader here.
Srinivas.
Thank you for Wage World. We're going to go and do some more business. We'll be back later. This is Wade Rathje. We're with Wage World today, and we're in India. It's very exciting. We talked to Suresh and Dharmendra for the last 15 minutes about the new Hawker's Law and what it means for our organizing and how the union is forming. Now we're in Chennai. I'm with Suresh still, and we're talking to Nityan Yararama.
Jayarama.
My pronunciation way wrong, but my friend Nitty is a journalist, activist, and longtime veteran of campaigns in the Chennai area. I met him recently in New York briefly and wanted to follow up, and he's been fighting, among other things, a coal plant. Nitty, welcome to Wage World, and tell us what you're doing down here with your colleagues.
Specifically on the issue of the coal plant, it's in a very beautiful part of my home state, which is Tamil Nadu. It's a South Indian coastal state. And this plant is a coastal power plant, which means it's coming up very close to the sea. It will have its own captive port. It's a 4,000 megawatt power plant, so it's a very, very large
big
unit.
Plant, yeah.
And will burn roughly about 15 million tons of coal. Every day about 40,000 tons of coal will be burned. About 5,000 tons of coal ash will be generated, and that will be dumped in a low-lying area further away from the power plant. A captive port is being set up on an area which is largely sand dunes and extremely, even besides being beautiful countryside, a very important area, because these dunes are what protect the inland areas from the extreme behavior of the sea. It might be a tsunami or a cyclone.
And obviously that area was hit by a tsunami some years ago.
Yeah, in 2004, Indian Ocean tsunami, that area was hit, but the villages in that area were not affected because of the dunes. And if a port comes up and flattens those dunes, it's inviting disaster to your doorstep. So we are working there with the community. We are essentially a community support group, and we extend legal, scientific, media, and logistical support and advice to communities fighting destructive development projects.
Sounds like you've had to do a lot on the legal side from what you were telling me. It sounded like three or four different legal actions that are tying the government up on this at this point.
Well, I mean, not all the legal actions have been initiated by us. There have been some that have been initiated by farmers who stand to lose land. There are some that have been initiated by fisher folk, which we are supporting. And that one is a challenge to the license under the environmental law that the company has obtained. And this license was obtained through wrongful means, by presenting fraudulent data, by falsifying evidence. So we are looking at two separate cases. One would be a criminal case, and the other, which is ongoing, is a civil case in the National Green Tribunal. And that case will, we hope, result in the extinguishing of the environmental license, which means this project will not be able to come up.
And the Green Tribunal is a separate environmental court in India?
Yeah, it's a fast-track environmental court set up to take care of disputes under various environmental laws.
We need that in the United States, I think, as well. I mean, the federal court system just jams it all into one big gumbo. Maybe environmental court, a green court would be a good thing for us. We'll have to look into
that. I think it would be, but then here there is also an effort by the current government, which is the NDA government. It's a Hindu right-wing party that's in power. And they are growth fetishes, and they don't want anything to come in the way of growth, so they are doing undoing the environmental laws and also looking at ways of reducing the powers of the Green Tribunal.
Well, it also looks like they're attacking NGOs that are involved in environmental protection. Greenpeace,
among others,
about to shut down or something like that. And yeah, it sounds like, of course, then almost 9,000 nonprofits lost their licenses for some, because they were getting in the way of development, it sounded like. I'm sure I'm being too simplistic.
Well, I mean, it's the discourse is about stopping NGOs or stopping people who are affecting the nation's interests. What the nation's interest is something that has not been clearly defined. The government.
Sometimes we'd like to have something to say about that too.
That's right.
Yes.
But I think a lot of the NGOs that have been shut down or are being harassed are also people who are working for religious minorities. This is a government that is both an economic fundamentalist and a religious fundamentalist. So they pursue their violence on both fronts.
Sort of like Republicans in the U.S. on steroids.
That's right.
That's part of the fight they're having is who's more religiously fundamental, because we say they're all pro-development,
but
we don't like the governments in our two countries to be that similar. That's a dangerous thing.
Sure.
Sounds like you've been following a lot of the coastal developments right up here towards Chennai. You were talking to Suresh and I earlier about beautification projects. What does that really mean?
Well, it's the same thing as what it means in the U.S. It's gentrification by another name. And it is essentially getting rid of poor people and, quote-unquote, liberating the real estate so that the rich people can enjoy the benefits of it. The coast is a very highly contested space. The coast is where Chennai is a city of fisher folk and a large number of fishing hamlets, close to 13 villages. And these people are sitting on what the others consider to be prime real estate, and they consider the fisher folk to be illegitimate occupants. And looking at various ways of getting them out, one of the ways is to say that we need to make the coast beautiful. And to make the coast beautiful, we have to get the dirt away. And in that classification of dirt is included people.
Yeah, that's people removal.
Right.
They won't come right out and say that in U.S. ever since the late 60s and 70s, but it sounds like that's really the proposal here. It's clear the beaches to bring in the tourists. Those people making their livelihood there are going to have problems. I know as Suresh and I drove up along on the auto rickshaw, we came through the coast, and people were selling fish right on the street, hawkers. We're still working the nets and getting the fish out. It was still early in the morning. And all that would probably be gone, I imagine, in a beautification project. We'd have palm trees and beach chairs.
That's precisely the idea, and that the stretch that you went to is a stretch that is currently being targeted with a 50 crore, that's a 5 million rupee project.
Wow.
To quote unquote beautify that place, but it involves evicting all the vendors. And of course, I don't think it will go through, because even if the law permits it, the people will not.
Good, because what they would want to build is more upscale apartments or condos or... You were saying two or three floor units?
No, there are a couple of proposals. One is a proposal for the fisher folk itself, but there are other pieces of empty land which ought to be reserved for housing for low-income people and for the fisher folk. But those areas are being eyed for commercial come residential, high-end commercial come residential development. And this has been hanging fire. Successive governments have tried in vain to try and evict fisher folk. All said and done, people are, I mean, that's a nice thing about India, and I'm sure this case is the same in the US, is people keep democracy alive despite the government.
And by the hardest, yeah. By the hardest.
Yeah. While I'm concerned about it, I'm not overly worried. I think that it should be possible to prevent.
Well, it's important to prevent because you lose the whole authentic reason for the sea and the beer. I mean, life is different in this community if all of a sudden people can't both live and work the same place. So are there other issues that you and your colleagues are involved in now?
Sure, we're also looking at, see the thing is that the fishing villages in Chennai, for instance, are not seen as places with legitimacy, and one of the ways in which we're trying to increase the legitimacy is by increasing the visibility of these fishing villages to let people know that these are not slums, these are not encroachments, but these are thriving, dynamic places of living and livelihood and very old traditions of hunting in the sea. And when people look for wilderness, they look far away. But Chennai is a city that is sitting on the bank of a wilderness, and the Bay of Bengal is right there. And we have a project currently which is documenting the histories of fishing villages with the help of children from that village. And in January, we're looking at organizing a big festival including song, dance, and photographs and drawings and things like that, that will convert this entire area into a canvas for displaying the history of the village as a means of asserting our claim to this space.
And you, as a journalist, is any of that going to be written up? Or?
Yeah, I have written about it, and I will be writing more, not just about this. I mean, right now, I'm working on a piece about this whole ugly politics of beautification.
We want to hear more about this. We may have to get you separately on that. So, Rich, we were talking about the fact that this 2014 law may help some of these fishermen. Is that what your view would be?
The Street Vendors Act in the year 2014 guarantees their livelihood and protection of their livelihood and also rehabilitation of their vending activities. It also guarantees regulation of the street vending. So naturally this has to be a very good handy law for the on support of the fish vendors all along the coast of Tamil Nadu. And also the law speaks about saying the relocation should be the last resort, not the first aim. So unless there is no other way that they can be protected in their own place, relocation has to happen. So that way it really helps them.
The beautifiers might have to learn a little bit like about the hawker law, it sounds like. Maybe harder to just remove these people than they think.
Before they learn it, we have to teach them that this law says that even the Police Act has to be amended so that it makes space for the street vendors. So that's a great point there we have to see.
We call that an organizing handle in terms of what we do. So that sounds like it's a good thing we all got together with Nitty today. He'll be able to help us, we'll be able to help him.
Yes, of course. It would be great to work with Nitty, and it has been a very long time that I met.
So Chennai is growing rapidly still.
Yeah, not as rapidly as some of the other cities, and thank heavens for that.
I
think Bangalore is a gridlocked place, and the only thing that prevents Chennai from becoming like Bangalore is our bad weather. It stops people from coming here, and I thank the weather for that.
Yeah. By bad weather, you mean heat and humidity? Or?
That's right.
Because we got here, I live in New Orleans, so when I get to Chennai, I think, oh, this is like home. Yeah. But that also keeps us from getting, you know, as big as Dallas or Chicago or something like that. If people wanted to get in touch with the campaigns you're involved in, either on the coal side or on the fisher folk side, how would they find you and your people, Nitty?
For the Cheyur, the coal plant, we have a separate blog called Cheyur, cheyyur.blogspot.com. And for the Coastal Resource Center, we have another blog called the Coastal Resource Center.blogspot.org.
Repeat that again, just because Cheyur, some of our listeners aren't as quick with their pencils as we want them to be.
Okay, it's Cheyur, Cheyyur. Cheyyur.wordpress.com and the Coastal Resource Center.wordpress.com.
And this version of Wage World will also be on podcast in another day or two. Obviously, we're live streaming now. So any of you who didn't catch that want to scroll back in and hear more of what Suresh and Nidhi had to say, just go on www.kabf.org/wageworld and you'll hear this by Monday. It's been good to be in India. We've heard about Bengaluru, we've heard about Delhi, now we've heard about Chennai. People are going to wish that they could do this every Friday. Next Friday, though, we'll be talking about issues closer to home. This has been Wage World, www.kabf.org, 100,000 watts of people power and 100 watts at WAMF in New Orleans. See you next Friday. Thank you.